Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. Doing a little Monday market review here. I want to talk about Amari Cooper. So Amari Cooper is a pretty interesting player in terms of where he fits in the dynasty landscape at this point. Again, he fits generally a tier of player that I think is really interesting, which is you look at guys in their mid to late 20s who have hit multiple times the wide receiver position, and they tend to overperform. They tend to overperform their cost. So you look at Cooper, 609 in startup drafts in the past month, wide receiver 19. That's in a group of guys like he's going behind Allen Robinson by about a round. He's going half a round behind Keenan Allen. He's going right there with Mike Evans. Brandon Ayuk and T. Higgins are close there behind. Devonta Smith is in there. Deontay Johnson's in there. And then a whole bunch of guys. So it kind of represents the end of that tier. That just makes it a pretty glaring target to me as just an asset. Again, I think with him, it might be one of those situations where it might be tough to potentially see a big uptick, right? Like him, Mike Evans, Keenan Allen, Allen Robinson, they're probably not going to be top 10 wide receivers at any point in ADP going forward. But you could see him hang out right around here. I think that's, you know, you sort of look at, they could be sort of in that range for in a 2 year or so window. And then at that point, you know, they're going to be sort of hitting a falling value perspective, you know, falling value profile. But I think it's pretty, you know, from a, if you're looking for production, they'll probably beat their cost points from here on out would sort of be, you know, what I would be, you know, especially over the next 3 to 4 years, if they're still in, you know, 1A, 1B type roles, which Cooper absolutely is. A couple things here. He'll be 28 in June. Cap hits of $22 million the next 3 years. So in 2022, 2023, and 2024, all getting $22 million cap hits. They could save, the Dallas Cowboys could save $16 million by cutting him in 2022, $18 million by cutting him in 2023, $20 million cutting him in 2024. And at this point, he doesn't have any guaranteed money left. So one of the things you'll have to watch for, and I was doing a big time study. I went through all the contracts basically at the skill positions across the NFL. It was pretty big deep dive. And one of the things you really realize when you do that is you get to a point where it's contractually, it becomes very much money's guaranteed in the first couple years. And then after that, it's not really guaranteed. A lot of what dictates it is, you know, the salary. And then you really got to compare it to what the cap hit is and all that stuff. So I think when you see some guys, you know, hey, they want to restructure a deal where it looks like, hey, you know, there's pretty good, you know, the contract looks pretty good, but it's ultimately not guaranteed. And then you get them, you know, holding out or whatnot, right? That's a common story. A guy like Chandler Jones is going through that right now. There's not any guaranteed money left. That's kind of what the deal is. And you can sort of see that as a renegotiation point. Hey, we'll guarantee, you know, this year, next year, something like that. And then all of a sudden the contract might not look too terribly different, right? Maybe it's a few million dollars more or something like that. It might be an extension, but ultimately what matters is the guaranteed money. And it's not that far away. So, and it's not that far away in terms of the what's actually on the books or anything like that, but it's really significant to the player. So it could be one of those situations with Cooper, you know, owed basically $66 million over that 3 year span where he comes back. Maybe it's a lower number, but it's more guaranteed, and it's basically guaranteed money in his pocket. Otherwise, he's going to find himself on the market at some point. And could absolutely be a prime time target. You know, you look at some of the teams that could be in the market for a wide receiver. The Bills, for example, on the opposite side of Stephon Diggs, wouldn't be impossible to think about that when you sort of lump together what their costs are at the other positions. Again, it's going to be tough with Allen with the, you know, with the extension, the mega deal that he's going to have upcoming. But then, you know, you look at Baker, for example, in Cleveland, like they can really open up some cap space by really cutting both Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, and all of a sudden, like, that would be a decent landing spot for Cooper. You know, you could keep doing that. You know, you could go the Chargers, right? There's a number of teams that are going to have strong interest in him, I would imagine, assuming health and continued productivity, which is what he has. So we'll do a rundown here of some of the stats. I think it's interesting. 127 targets as a rookie in 2015. 123 as a rookie, 127 in his second year. So you're averaging $125. Do you think maybe that's if you were to sort of look at that, and then he becomes basically a top three wide receiver in Dynasty, if you were to look at that, maybe you, in hindsight, go back and say, hey, listen, like that might not necessarily be a great sign, right? Hey, it's 125, first 2 years is really good, but you need more than that. And when you get to that point where you're really projecting a significant uptick, right, that could be a super cautious thing, I think. And that's why I don't have a ton of caution about, I'm not super concerned about Justin Jefferson, for example, because he can get those numbers up higher. Whereas you sort of look at a guy like A.J. Brown, who profiles somewhat similar to how Cooper was early on. They're different players, but that same cost point, the same sort of hit profile and all that stuff, you sort of look at it and you're saying, eesh, it looks very similar. So it's a caution spot to me, just with him. So just sort of be on the monitor for that with some other players. But yeah, so then after, so basically $125 first 2 years, he then gets hurt in 2017, missed some time. So 90 targets, 2018, 102 targets. I think that might have been the year he got traded too. 2019, 116 targets. 2020, a career high, 128 targets. The reception numbers, 72, 83, 48. You know, that's the year he only saw 90 targets. Big downtick in efficiency that year. 75, 79, 92. So basically every year but that 1 year that was kind of a washout in 2017, every year he's been north of 72 receptions. He's been north of basically 102 targets. And then outside of that 102, it's been north of 116. So that's a really high floor situation, I think it's the easiest way to say it. A lot of the ancillary stuff checks out as well. Yards per route run has been very good. Throughout his career, 88th percentile in terms of guys with more than 50 targets in their career, since I go back and track, which I think is since 08 for yards per route run. I think that's as far back as PFF has it. So again, very, very, very good. So you feel good about that. And the percent of routes that he's been targeted on has basically stayed exactly the same. 21, 21, 20, 19, 22, 21%. So firmly in line, like we kind of know that he's 21% of the routes that he runs, he's going to be targeted on. We kind of know what he does on a per route basis, and it's pretty good. Right, so yards per route run, 1.84, 1.95, 1.54, that was the downtick year, 1.85, 2.29, 1.81. So we kind of have an idea how he's going to perform, sort of given the targets that he's going to have. And it's, right, it's pretty secure, high-end wide receiver one, or excuse me, high-end wide receiver two, low-end wide receiver one type production, you know, based on where the position falls in terms of injuries and all that stuff, and some of the touchdown variants and all of those things sort of do a lot more to depict the actual, or determine, I guess, the actual finish. And some of those things can be variants that you can't necessarily predict. But if you're thinking sort of in a range, I mean, just I'll read them off to you, and you sort of tell me what you think in terms of where he sort of slots in at the position. 21, 16, 35, and that was the downtake year, 18, 10, 15. He's basically at this point kind of a more glamorous version of Brandon Cooks. But I think he's got some higher target upside. I think he probably has higher touchdown upside too. And we sort of saw some of that stuff with him when Dak was there last year. I think he just has higher upside. Like if you told me over the next 2 years he finishes better than, you know, his best season in his career, that wouldn't shock me. So that's really the angle with him. Again, it was pretty robust with Dak Prescott. One other thing too, I would note, it's a pretty big split in terms of between him when he's played with Dak Prescott and when he hasn't. So we have a decent sample now at this point in his career, because he played with Derek Carr, and Derek Carr can be a little bit of a limiting element in terms of some of the efficiency stuff. If only he could throw on play action. That's the great what if of this quarterback generation. But when you sort of look at when you look at Cooper in terms of how he produces by quarterback, you'll see that it's typically basically across the board better with Dak Prescott. In his career, Amari Cooper has played 93 games. 30 of them have been with Dak Prescott. 63 have been without him. So we have a pretty decent split there in terms of that. Essentially two full seasons with Amari Cooper playing with Dak Prescott, and then, you know, significant, basically four seasons essentially playing with somebody else. And it, the numbers are pretty notable in terms of targets. 8.3 targets per game. That's 133 for a 16 game season. And we'll have to, you know, jack that up. It's basically 140. It's 140, 141 for 17 game season. So 8.3 a game, 7.37 a game without him. So it's basically a full target more. Some of that might be some of the offense pacing and that sort of stuff, so keep that in mind. But some of the rest of the stuff's notable. 5.7 receptions per game. That's good for 91 in a 16-game season. 4.4 receptions per game out of splits. That is with without Dak Prescott playing. More touchdowns, a half a touchdown a game with Prescott there, 0.37 a game without Prescott. And then the big number, I think really the big number is receiving yards. So 77.9, which is good for 1246 on a 16 game pace without Prescott. 61.62, which is 986 yards on a 16 game pace. You just see it's a different level of it's just a different level. When you sort of translate that to the past year, last year he was on pace for 1,357 receiving yards, 84.8 a game last year, 11 targets a game. The touchdown numbers were actually down. Only 0.2 touchdowns per game with Dak in there. So again, he's just it's hasn't been a huge touchdown season situation for Cooper. So we'll have to look for that. You know, maybe some more red zone work and whatnot there. Some of that stuff can be fickle though. So I would be, you know, AJ Brown has like really, really good touchdown variance. So maybe this at this point is who Amari Cooper is. But I think that there's, you know, when you see that amount of targets, you can get some variance in a year. So 7.8 receptions, that was good for 125 over the course of a season. Just an outrageous number. He's good for a 176 in terms of targets with on pace when Dak Prescott played last year. In the games without Dak, 13.42 points per game. That's down from 17.84 when Dak was in there. So that's a full four, almost 4.5 point difference per game. It's a huge difference over the course of a season. That's about 70 point difference. So that's just a huge, huge difference. The receptions down basically 3 receptions a game without Dak Prescott last year. Receiving yards down 22 a game last year without Dak. So even the receiving, it's notable that the receiving yards are still above what his out of split, you know, his non-Dak over the course of his career. He actually performed better last year versus at other times without Dak Prescott being his quarterback. So that's basically, it's essentially the Raiders year, the Raiders portion of his career. So when you sort of look at that, like, it's probably a good indicator, like, hey, he actually did perform well. And we sort of see that it checks out too, right? In the yards per route run, it's basically in line with what he's done for the rest of his career. It's basically right about his median. So all that's to say, I think healthy Dak Prescott, healthy Amari Cooper, looking pretty good. And probably, you know, in the range of where he's going, he's probably got some of the best upside. And I think he's got a really good floor too. And so maybe the touchdown stuff caps a little bit of his upside. But when you sort of look at his floor, I mean, it's really, really rock solid, assuming health. He does have an injury, picked up an ankle tweak over this past, over the summer at some point. There's potential maybe he won't start training camp. I don't know. We'll have to watch for that. When you sort of look at, when you prorate out his games last year with Dak Prescott, so 285 would have put him as wide receiver 5. So again, he ends up finishing wide receiver 15, 5 touchdowns on the season. When you sort of look at what it could have been with Dak, basically a full 10 spots higher, it would have been, yeah, it would have been basically essentially about 50 points better than he actually finished was what he was on pace for. And when you sort of prorate that out over the warp numbers, you're looking at, you know, about 4/10 of a win over replacement there. That's a big difference. So I do think there's still that there. When you look at some of the guys above him, like, you can absolutely see some of that come back to the pack. I mean, is Mike Evans going to have 13 touchdowns again? You know, maybe some of the volume for him goes up. Is Adam Thielen going to have 14 touchdowns again? You know, is Cooper going to have 5? When you look at the guys up there in the top, and basically in the top 20, he's the highest scoring guy with less than 6 touchdowns. And so the only other guys that finish with less than 6 touchdowns in the top 20 are Terry McLaurin and Robbie Anderson. So they finished 19 and 20th respectively. So again, you sort of get some of that boost there for him. What is notable is he hasn't really approached the higher ends of the position in terms of some of the inside the 20, inside the 10 type stats. So like last year, for example, 14 targets inside the 20, it put him basically right around 20th at in the NFL in terms of targets in that range. He had 3 touchdowns. You just compare that to guys, you know, way further up. Davante Adams was, you know, standard deviations away. But Adam Thielen's a good example of this. 19 targets inside the 20-yard line last year, 13 touchdowns. 13 targets inside the 10-yard line last year, 10 touchdowns. You know, the 10 targets for Amari Cooper inside the 10-yard line last year, 2 touchdowns. So it's a pretty big difference there. So, you know, we'll see. I don't know if there's something to be gleaned from the lack of usage that he's seen, if there's something there. But I think that I tend to think that those things are kind of fickle. So, you know, we'll see there. And as offenses change, some of the design goes with it too. So you don't have some of the wit and stuff there and things like that, who could have taken up red zone targets at prior points. So, you know, we'll see. So I think we'll see. I think it's a good floor situation. I do think there's probably ceiling there, maybe not necessarily top 3 ceiling, but, you know, firmly in the wide receiver 1 type conversation, I think that's absolutely possible. When you look at some of the trades for him, I think I could be on both sides of some of these. So 110 and a future first for Cooper, I'd probably take the picks just because I think you might be able to replicate his production in Tyler Lockett, in, you know, that sort of range of the position, Robert Woods, and at a cheaper cost. And so maybe you can do that for like a second, and then you're picking up the difference, you know, between that pick and the first there you're getting this year with the future first. I mean, even if you gave 2 seconds, right, a second this year and a second next year, I think you're not getting a too terribly different type of asset. And you're getting, you know, the upside of the top of the future first next year. So that would be, you know, I might look to pivot if I was trying to do that deal. I would do that deal just because I think there's multiple ways to really extract some. You know, 110, you can potentially be in a move up spot too if you want to grab a guy. But I think you get a really good core asset there. Cooper and 202 for Irv Smith and 110. I mean, give me the Cooper side pretty easily. I think the 110 spot, you're probably, it is a tear break there. I don't necessarily love, like, if that's Mac Jones or something like that. Like, it's okay. Like, it's pretty good. But I think, you know, I'd take Cooper in 202 personally. Here's one that I really like the Cooper side of. A.J. Brown for Cooper, Pittman, and a future first. So, again, multiple ways to get outs here. I don't love Pittman. Pittman's probably then a flip guy for me. But I think that's a good example of a trade that I almost will never do. Is to basically give a receiver like Cooper sort of in that same range and, you know, add a first to it to get a quote younger wide receiver. I think that's a really fraught strategy historically. So Miles Sanders for Cooper, I think that one's interesting in terms of maybe Sanders has a little bit more difference making upside. I don't necessarily know if I agree with that. Yeah, I think Cooper could be. I could see both sides of that. I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with someone taking the other side of that. Latavius Murray in a second for Cooper. I mean, listen, I love Latavius Murray, but give me Cooper as the asset. And then Cooper for DJ Shark and LaVisca Chenault. It's interesting, both those guys with the Jaguars. Not sure I'd necessarily construct a deal like that because I think your situation's capped. You don't really have a – it's not really a two-way go that you're seeing in some of these other situations. So that would sort of be my hesitancy there. So that's pretty much the rundown on Amari Cooper. I thought I could go deeper depth. I'm going to do some more deep dives of these guys here going forward. Just some guys that interest me and been looking at for some other projects and stuff. You know, this one kind of jumped out. So I think the injury thing's a big monitor. But if you sort of need a guy, I mean, going at it in some of these ways, right, in sort of a slide down from a higher asset, I think that's a really, really compelling thing to do. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.